investment fund as it is, and the total amount that we get from them, the highest being House Choice and followed by the SAPC. How is the budget split? This budget that we get from various sources, how is it then split up in terms of the regulation report, allocations that we must stick to, and 60% should go to the broadcasters because they are the largest, and we at the moment are sitting at 53% because of some deficit in terms of the budget we have. Where we've got a challenge, honorable members, deputy ministers, with the print and digital, in terms of the regulations, the digital space is, the print and digital is supposed to be getting 25%, sitting at 6%, and this I must explain that it is because of the deficit in terms of the funding from the major print houses. Major print houses stopped funding the MDT in 2014-15, so this sector then only gets about 2.5 million of the discount. And then we've got research, and we're not doing badly in terms of the research. Who do we support as the MDTA? Because that is very important. The MDTA supports community media, which is defined in our Act as geographically founded for communities or any group of persons that share the same interest. That is the reason why you see we've got not only communities, but that if it's a group of interest like religion, like campus radios, we do fund them. Small commercial prints, we do fund them. These are independent media enterprises. They are run for personal gain, and those we fund from the funding that I'm saying is directly from the discuss. And it is important for us to now come up with other strategies on how we can support that sector, because it is just not sustainable the way we are funding it. Research and capacity building, we do fund that, digital, new media, and online. So why do we support the community media? Community media is to ensure that there's plurality of voices. It is to ensure that there's social dialogue, public participation, active citizenry. It can hold our government to account, social cohesion, but more so, dissemination of information and transformation of the media. And what do we fund? What is our scheme, funding scheme at the MDTA, and what does it entail? It entails of direct grants, which are grants that are provided. I will explain where those grants go, because we can either fund you through equipment, infrastructure, but we also provide grants so that people are able to pay salaries, are able to pay stipends, and when we in that area of funding, then we then say we are supporting government in terms of the job creation. That is why we emphasize on funding, especially the volunteers. What is important to note is that because these are community media, so voluntarism is a key characteristic of community media. Community media for community media, and by the communities. And so there's a lot of voices that come and influence the content and the programs that are there. Because as it is, the MDTA by law is not allowed to influence the programs and the broadcasting in those stations. Training and capacity building, and we also provide them with emergency funding. And if I'm allowed, I will briefly talk to what is done during the lockdown. In terms of how we fund the broadcast, the community broadcasters, it would be through content production, which is those items, like salaries, telecommunications, local travel, training and capacity, focus on sales and marketing, finance, skills for training interventions and management skills, because we think that some of those skills tend to benefit the community media in terms of sustainability. When we fund a community radio station or a television, we also provide for administration costs, bank charges, audit fees, rental, maintenance, insurance, stationery. What is important on the capital expenditure side is that we will provide you, especially if you're a startup broadcaster, we provide you with broadcast studios, two studios on air, and production studio, computers, laptops, provide for Yeah. Minister, Minister Mtembu, who has to increase them. So if you go to the Eastern Cape, you will notice that Eastern Cape has got TBN, New State has got nothing. It's got no television. And if you go to KZN, we've got one KZN television. Limpopo does not have any license for television, even though they have Limpopo, zero, Northern Cape, zero, and Northwest has been approved but not granted by ICASA. Western Cape, we've got Cape TV, and we have funded, honorable members, five community television in South Africa, because housing alone is for two, for Swade and for Wetu and Republic. Then I'm just going to quickly scan through this other slide. In terms of how we support community media with signal distribution, we're working on developing strategies on effective way on to transmit rather than relying only on Zentech. And we have had discussions with the minister and Zentech on how we can also assist them reduce the debt. As it is now, what we do is on an annual basis, starting from last year, we issue calls for applications for signal distribution costs. And there's some criteria that you must meet in terms of taking ownership of the debt. And we have also begun to pay for connection fees, because when we have invested in you in terms of broadcast equipment, which is very expensive, and other operational costs, and you still can't transmit, then that investment is made. So we're saying to you that we will absorb a certain cost, because it is what gives the most challenges to the community media. Because if you set up by 500,000 as a setup cost, and then that amount gets amortized over a 10-year period or so, then the community station, we've seen, never satisfied. The web stories, they never recover, because whereas they've got the amortized amount, which is part of the setup cost, they must then start paying on a monthly basis, and they then cannot raise sufficient funds because of the sustainability challenges they have. So if I go back to quickly, I've spent 2 minutes on this one. As we know that the community media sector would actually struggle once the president and government messaging directly to communities. We also are part of the communication system that is again chaired by Minister Mtembu, that supports the NCC with communication. We are appealing for donations, reaching to certain organizations to ask for more money, because we see the impact of COVID lasting with us for a little bit longer, either than just this year. So we are already thinking about how to support the sector in 2021. The next slide just talks to general, general challenges of the sector. I think as I conclude, honorable members, it is crucial for me to leave the house knowing that we are cognizant of the challenges that the sector level of focus of deliverability in the sector. If I must just explain in what is the aim of the sustainability model. We are hoping that the sustainability model will inform three categories in terms of the sector. That we feel that we cannot treat and support an urban community radio station the same way we support the one in the rural communities. So we are saying through this research on sustainability, we will categorize the sector in terms of the group that can sustain itself to some extent, those that can partially sustain, and those that will not be able to sustain themselves at all. So we use the robot analogy and say those that are in a critical state will be placed in the red, and we will have an amber group that we think can, through resources and support, but that the support for each of the groups must almost be tailor-made to the needs of those groups. That we're able to move them, the amber group, some of them to the green. The green is able to say, MDG 8, I need you maybe once a year for a certain program and so forth. So those are the things that we're working on now, honorable members. I've already spoken to how we try to lobby for more funding. In fact, the largest funder, our biggest funder, MultiChoice, opened the door for us when we negotiated. We're finding a 40 million per annum contract with them, but they said to us because of the pandemic, they will also give us additional 6 million this year. And they said that if you want more, motivate for more, we should done, and we will look into it. So that is what we're working towards, and that's where I end, honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Justice, I was about to ask you to please wrap up for us. Thank you so much for that interesting presentation and detailed presentation on the community media sector and the future of the community media sector. Before, there were three sectors that used to be compartmentalized, even in terms of regulation and policy and how it is structured, and it was the public broadcasting sector, the private broadcasting sector, and the community media sector. And they all had unique characteristics and unique traits about them when they were envisioned. But now as we move in the digital landscape, those boundaries are becoming blurred every day. And the new buzzword that is there in the sector actually is about collaboration and working together and removing those barriers and boundaries. And I think what you also just mentioned in terms of the partnership that you have with MultiChoice speaks exactly to that. So I'm hoping when we have the engagement later, we will also stick to that point of how do we encourage better and improve collaboration between these previously compartmentalized sectors. Now we'll call the SABC to come to the fore. I'm going to call the GM for Policy Regulatory Affairs from the SABC, Mr. Phil. I think they call him Rafil in the sector. To please come on board, Phil Moilwa. Excuse me if I'm pronouncing your surname incorrectly. Please, Sister Kiki, can you remove your presentation so that he can also start flighting and present? Rafil, are you there?
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. With me today I've got the CFO, Ms. Yolande van de Leon. I've got the CEO, Mr. Madoda Mkagwe, Ian Blatches, who's our COO, GE Television, Sniker, and then Phil, who is the General Manager of Regulatory Affairs. That's the team that's part of this session today. So we're very grateful for this opportunity as the SABC, because it does allow us an opportunity to engage, and, you know, because what we do as the SABC in an ever-changing digital platform environment requires that we constantly review our mandate and make sure that it is protected and the integrity and the viability of the public broadcaster is taken care of. Of the most important for us is the creation of an enabling and relevant policy and regulatory framework that ensures fair competition amongst players, but also ensures the stability and the strengthening of public broadcaster. We have started these engagement with the Portfolio Committee in Communication, and it is important for us to continue engaging with the wider range and scope of key stakeholders regarding the current size, and acknowledging that this change will require collective consideration and cooperation, because alone we won't be able to do justice to ensuring the sustainability of public broadcasting. As we engage on this journey, we do recognize the importance that we all should be guided by our interest of ensuring the existence and resilience and viability of the public broadcaster, so that we continue to deliver on our comprehensive mandate, which is very important, and that serves millions and millions of South Africans who rely on SABC for education, information, and entertainment. So as SABC, we welcome this opportunity, and we invite all key stakeholders to work with us to ensure that we can reposition, recreate an SABC that can outlive all of us and that can be able to survive for another 84 years. So really, we're very excited about this opportunity, and I'm going to hand over to Brasile, as referred to by the facilitator, who will then present our input as the SABC. Over to you, too.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honourable members, Deputy Minister, colleagues, and all attending this discussion session. I would want to preface this as a very good opportunity for us really to reflect on what really the SABC is all about in terms of delivery of its mandate. Our presentation is structured as follows. We have all the critical points, and I'm going to assume that the presentation has been read, and I'm going to try to emphasize critical points by each line. But I would like to preface the presentation by really stating that we are quite aware that there's a pending policy, audiovisual policy and legislative process, and therefore our presentation today is not exhaustive of all the issues. We are looking forward to those processes in the future, but we'd like to highlight critical areas that begin to engage us on critical policy matters. So we'll look at the broadcast environment just to give context. We'll look at the mandate in terms of how we account on our mandate and how the mandate impacts on us, and most important, raise some of the challenges and what the issues are around commercial sensitivity and accountability. The context is very much historical, and I think all of you might be aware that it's almost over 21 years. I mean, 1999, that's exactly when the Broadcasting Act came, and this was intended really to give the SABC a clear mandate which was informed by the circumstances of the time. So it is very important today to consider that we're in a very fast-changing digital multi-platform environment, which has to be considered in how, as parliamentarians, we review the legislation and policies that should be able to govern the SABC currently today and going forward. Therefore, the SABC, at some point, it was the only biggest broadcaster. It was the go-to for media in terms of advertisers. And then this has informed the legislature at the time when they're imposing this huge mandate, which is in the charter and also, you know, indicated in the Broadcasting Act. So this background is very important, because there was a time when the SABC was almost everything to broadcasting, and there was not any other bigger broadcaster than itself. But we see that the contradiction of that space in 1999 and today, and draw a comparison. The current reality of the SABC is that the SABC safety is highly regulated. The environment consists of policies and regulations that actually are very much archaic and need very serious review. And as I said, we're looking forward to that review in the coming policy and regulatory processes. If you look at the ETA that was actually legislated in 2005, it had a very critical point of ensuring that there is platform neutrality and technology neutrality in terms of the licensing framework and in terms of the operations of broadcasters. These are the four sides that the legislature has. But the unfortunate thing is if you look at the policies such as the DTT policy and the regulations, they are sort of now inhibiting us to really realize that objective. And this is very important because in a fast-changing digital environment, you do not want to be platform locked. You want to be able to play in all the spaces. And I think this brings, if I may just throw a simple example with the telecommunications sector. There was a stage where the telecom network operators would lock in a subscriber to a particular network on the device. And the regulator at some point ruled and said, look, if you want to port your number, you can port it. You don't have to be locked to a device. If I buy a Samsung, I don't have to be only use one network on that. And this is the kind of logic that we're trying to bring when you talk about technological neutrality and platform neutrality. That we're not supposed to be locked down to DTT or to any other platform, but we should be able, in the delivery of our mandate, if everybody wants us to be able to be reached everywhere, anytime, we should be able to be accessed across all platforms, and the SABC should enjoy that space. So if you look at these regulations, for example, that require 95% DTT usage, it's very inhibitive because it doesn't give us the leeway in terms of platform usability. But most important, as I said, is to consider what this do in terms of anti-competitiveness to the SABC. While we are still basing a start with DTT, you have on the back door the OTTs that are coming to the play and are able to take with agility, without any hindrance, the very same market share that the SABC is fighting for while it has to deal with the red tape of policy, regulation, and legislation. Now, this is just a slide that is actually just trying to give a historical perspective from what I said. The SABC in 1976, as early as that, and I'm just going to quickly run through it, it was only public broadcaster or the broadcaster, and it had a 100% share. Just fast track and look at 2016, which actually reflects what is it today on television market, you realize that the SABC only has 46% share, and the numbers are going down. So that tells you how fast the environment has changed since the introduction of your Mnet, your DSTV, your ETV, the way to TV, all these, you know, culminating into now the internet service providers such as Netflix and Showmax. It tells you that the environment is changing and the SABC is vulnerable every day. And hence, in the presentation, we're arguing that the legislature was very much foresighted when he said you must have protection of the SABC. This is not a favor, but actually it's meant to make the public broadcast sustainable. So this slide is very important for us to reflect because we are still being measured in terms of our promise, whether financial or otherwise, even though we're still the biggest broadcaster with the largest ever market share. Now, in terms of radio, and this is a very interesting scenario here, the SABC, given the numbers of the radio stations, it is having a high market share. I'm at 73.2 as we look at it, you know, around the present in terms of current data. But the biggest point that we're making here, which is relevant to this tension between public service mandate and commercial mandate, is that while we enjoy that we can reach many South Africans and deliver our mandate, the biggest challenge here is we have to generate revenue. And in doing that, we start to have the hindrances around the numbers that we have, which cannot be converted to commercial revenue. Under normal circumstances, this shouldn't be a bigger issue if there was a balance in funding of the SABC. But because of the SABC being left to itself, being left to the market, we have to make sure that whatever audience numbers that we have are actually convertible to revenue. And we have to ask ourselves the big question, is that how we want to measure the SABC in every business activity that engages in terms of audiences? So this really brings us to think much more differently, and I think it also brings us to clarify the issues that normally are misconstrued that the SABC has bigger numbers and therefore it has a bigger revenue share. So this is the point that I want you to make very strongly around our market share on radio, that it doesn't really translate into revenue share. Now, in terms of the mandate as legislated from we have was back. So this raises the whole issue about platforms, that the SABC has to be given enough leverage in terms of using any other platform to ensure that its accessibility is widespread. The other point in terms of this mandate is the whole issue of news and public affairs programming. While we enjoy, you know, position one, and everybody keep commending us that are doing well on the news channel, but we need to ask ourselves, is this channel accessible to all South Africans? Why is this channel stuck on satellite? What is happening with other platforms such as DTT? So it is very, very important, Chair, that as we anticipate a changing environment, a legislative change, we need to ask ourselves this question. If there's anything South Africans can rise up against us and say, but look, we have this channel, but we're not accessible to it, then they'll be fair in raising that objection. And therefore, but the SABC at the moment is hamstrung to only the analog environment, with DTT not giving the efficiency and the rollout that it's supposed to give to the SABC. A good example is also the mandate on educational programming. While we acknowledge this, while it's a good mandate, a classical example is the education channel that we have just applied and granted by the ICASA. Why is this channel accessible to everyone? That's anticipated in the mandate. That's another big question that I wanted to raise, to say it's not about what is the SABC's mandate. The bigger question is how the SABC should deliver its mandate and how the SABC should be given an enabling environment to deliver on its mandate. So these are two critical questions that we need to put in the back of our mind. The other biggest mandate that we have to be doing relates to commissioning of independent production sector. The SABC has always, since inception, been seen as a driver of local content, as the liberator of the independent production sector to be able to go into the economic mainstream. Even today, still expected to start. And therefore, we are saying this mandate cannot be realized if the SABC is still restricted in terms of the current regulatory policy environment. The other point that I would love to... Sorry, Chair, we're trying to make sure everybody can see. We're trying to share the presentation again.
Around how to access this, right? So this is where as legislature you come in and say, we need to come
section, which is section 11 of the Act, it speaks of the commercial mandate of the SABC. The point that is critical here is that the section says, you know, the regulatory structures for commercial broadcasting of the SABC has to be, you know, dealt with equally like others. But the difficulty we're experiencing around this thing is that we're not getting a fair deal. The SABC, in terms of, for example, if it wants to acquire a commercial channel on DTT, it goes through a different process from other commercial broadcasters. The other commercial broadcasters, that's over the counter, just apply for authorization, boom, they get their channel. The SABC has to go through a public process. By the time actually that channel is licensed, somebody has run with the idea and launched it in the market. So what we... Hello?
Proceed. Can those who are not speaking please mute their mic? Proceed.
Yes, thank you. So we are saying we need to create a regulatory parity here. We need fairness in terms of how the commercial team of the SABC in particular and the commercial services are also dealt with in terms of regulation as provided for in the legislation. The other most critical point, Chair, is the whole subsidy of the public broadcasting and the commercial broadcasting. Much as we have an argument that we're making around the two divisions, we're saying there should be consideration of how the public services are actually subsidized by through public payers. This slide that deals with the unfunded mandate, it is at the heart of the tension for the topic in terms of this tension between public service and commercial service. That the SABC, while it's supposed to be a public funded commercial, a public service broadcaster, it finds itself having to rely on about 70%, 77% of its revenue from the advertising and 15% from television licenses, 5% from other activities, while 3% only from government. This is very schizophrenic. If you look and do a comparative study with any other public broadcaster worldwide, this is, in fact, by translation, we are effectively operating a commercial broadcaster as expected to live on public service money. That's exactly where now the contradiction is, because we're not supposed to be delivering to make money, but we're supposed to be delivering to the South African public to make impact in terms of transformation and change. Revenue should be an enabler. And therefore, they should be augmented by subsidization from the public pay. So the SABC under the circumstances still has to compete with all the broadcasters for revenue and audiences, while at the same time having to deliver on public service mandate. Now, the bigger question is, as provided for the legislation, is the SABC protected? Is the integrity and viability protected? The ECA provided that the SABC has been protected. And sometimes this chair is very important for reflection by the legislature, because it gets to be misinterpreted deliberately by competitors. It gets to be misinterpreted deliberately by those actually that do not want the SABC to be as viable as it's supposed to be. The intention here is to ensure that while we deliver an extensive mandate that actually requires extensive resources, the policymaker and the legislature have to ensure at all times that the SABC is protected. But maybe the question is what we mean by protection from a regulatory and policy-based point of view. It means every regulation that gets introduced, it has to be measured against its impact on the SABC. The regulator should be doing what you call regulatory impact analysis. The regulator should be doing market research to ensure that whatever player that's introduced, whatever regulation that is being introduced, whatever policy, is not going to negatively affect the SABC. And that's what protection is all about. But what we have seen, and with the evolution of the broadcasting landscape, is that the SABC was left to its own demise. The SABC has never got the protection that it provides. And that's exactly what we are trying to say in this slide here, to say this is very, very, very important in this ever-changing multi-channel digital environment. Now, what are those issues that are really bringing challenge in from a policy and regulatory point of view? The first point we're saying is that this division of PBS and PCS is really archaic, it's irrelevant, it doesn't speak to the current market and organizational position of the SABC. At the time this was introduced 21 years ago, it was just a mechanism to try to monitor what is happening on the And from the advertiser's point of view, no one when he watches television, he says, I want to see PBS or I want to see commercial channel. Whether it's SABC3, whether it's Metro, whether it's Munganalonene, people just want to see and hear what they want in terms of content. And therefore, it doesn't help much to be still having this division, when actually the SABC, even from inception, it was conceived as a unitary organization. It was not conceived as PBS and PBS. It was just one public broadcaster. And worldwide, this is the norm. SABC should operate as a public broadcaster. However, with the oversight, with the necessary mechanisms that are there in terms of effectivity. Therefore, it's kind of misleading and it muddles issues in terms of these two divisions, the PBS and the PBS, because it doesn't help from a commercial point of view, and it doesn't even help from the audience point of view. And even at the time that these channels and stations were licensed, there was no consideration of the current environment. I mean, they have three radio stations against 15 other radio stations. And the question is, can that really be sustainable if we have to talk cross-subsidization? So these are the issues that we have to see as inhibiting to the SABC in terms of the current situation going forward. The other critical point that needs to be looked into in terms of delivery of mandate by the SABC is the platforms for the channel. We have a digital environment for DTA space. Why restricting the SABC to a particular environment? And if the ECA's intention was to introduce platform neutrality and also to ensure that there is interoperability in terms of the devices. And I think this is very, very, very important, Jay, because we are going to a situation where almost everybody comes to this own set of box. And can you imagine you have a set of box for you know, pay television, a set of box for OpenView, a set of box for ODM, a set of box for DTT. Surely if you look at your TV rack, you might probably look like you are a shelf in a store. So this is a whole principle about interoperability that we are trying to raise around the, you know, the devices that we should policy and legislation should really fix that problem. Because currently now, it doesn't help from an audience point of view. And I think legislation should be in the public interest. Is it in the public interest that whenever you want to subscribe to any other content, video or television, that you need to have this old set of box on the side? I don't think from a consumer point of view it makes any sense. And these are the issues for policy that needs to be considered. The level of public funding, I cannot overemphasize that we have only 3% that we get from funding from government and 15% from license fee. We are really looking forward, Chair, that we need a future-proof ICT policy or what you call audiovisual policy that is going to assist us to move away from traditional broadcasting so that we are able to see and reap the benefits of a digital environment. So that policy is really, 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 really needed like yesterday. We need to ensure that it happens so that all these issues can be streamlined and be reviewed. The other critical point is level of competitive regulatory framework. As I indicated, we have many players that are coming to the market that are not regulated. You've got the OTT players, you've got many other satellite players. Some people don't even need a license. I mean, you can make your channel and go to a satellite player and put it there and compete with the SABC. The more than 200 channels that you find in some of the satellite players are actually in direct competition with the SABC, but they don't have a license. The OTTs, I cannot overemphasize that point that they are actually having a free lunch, and that is one thing that has to be looked in terms of the current review of the regulatory environment. So there's no protection on the validity of the SABC. If you look at the current regulations, I've already spoken to the sports regulations in terms of how the SABC struggles to get national sporting codes. And I must emphasize here because sometimes people think we want to do all the commercial leagues or codes that actually have nothing to do with the national flag. Here we're referring to the national sporting event. That every national sporting event, the SABC, the public broadcaster, need to be able to be given that protection in terms of accessing the free-to-air rights. They must carry, I think this has been a song for ages, that all SABC channels cannot be carried for free by any other subscription broadcaster or any other broadcaster for that matter, without not negotiating commercial terms with the SABC. Because the SABC pays for this, it competes in the market for the same content. So it is very, very ironic that it must offer it for free to any other broadcaster. DTT has spoken to each in terms of how restrictive and how less flexible it is in terms of making us competitive in the market. The other most time we are going to have all the meetings to decide and to ask for exemption from treasury, that person shall have gone to deal with the other competitor on the other side. And therefore, this is the irony about us being a commercial broadcast on the one hand, while at the same time having to go through public service regulated space, the environment, that is very restrictive. So this point is important that we review it, and we shall also revisit it later in the other slide. I think on this one, Chair, I'm not going to waste time in terms of the review of the mandate. We're simply saying, while we acknowledge that this mandate is relevant, but the mandate is very overly stated. If you look at what the charter is, a string of all the, you know, 101 activities, you may say so, where you have to be in the libraries, you have to be in the concert, and so on and so on. Some of the things really, they can be, you know, grouped into higher priority mandate and general mandate. We should be able to see the public broadcaster know that this is the priority for us to deliver. And examples can be like languages, universal access, local content, you know, delivery on content for women, children, and people with disabilities, the youth, sports, education, and youth. These are some of the things that I think as an example we can use in terms of prioritizing our mandate. And other most important point is that after prioritizing the mandate, there should be commitment to fund that. This is what happens when you go to BBC, you go to ABC, you go to DRT, you know, all other broadcasters in developed countries where actually they don't have any license fee collection program. But there is a commitment to ensure that the mandate that is crafted and that public broadcasters deliver on is actually funded. Now, there is an issue, Chair, in this line about the PMFA that I've already referred to. In summary, what we are saying here is the SABC needs some kind of flexibility, it needs some kind of agility in terms of its delivery on commercial activities because it competes with other broadcasters. Currently now, the SABC is locked down in terms of having to go through a very serious red tape and even sometimes very restrictive around the PMFA in terms of it having to compete. The last point here that I'm going to emphasize here is if you go to procurement and look at procurement processes and what is required, you are effectively saying, if one can put it this way, you are saying to the SABC, if one takes, you know, an example of a motor racing, you are saying to the SABC to go and race with everybody but don't keep the fast lane. And you are saying to the SABC, remember you're going to be stopped by a traffic controller at all times. Yet on the other hand, you've got your competitors running through the fast lane. So that's what these regulations actually say to us. You have to compete with everyone, but at the same time, we go through a stop and go in terms of trying to actually go into the fast lane. Each time you want to go to the fast lane, there is a red flag. You need to go and account and explain and request approval that you also want to be competitive. And this goes into the old technology solutions that the SMEC should be having. If you look at the infrastructure and the current technology development, they are so robust and fast that the SABC should be able to procure them with the lightning speed to be able to compete. But with the current situation, the SABC cannot be able to do that. We are going to present a plan. Before you know it, that plan has also been taken by your competitor. I would love to hand over to the Chair to conclude our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We have the Chair. 2 minutes, please, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and that's where we end. We're ready to end it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that insightful presentation, and I think some of the areas that you've raised are not new. It's things that have always been there, debates that have been there when we talk about the public broadcaster mandate and the discussions that were there pre-1994 and the discussions that need to happen in the year 2020 are completely different, especially in terms of the regulatory landscape and the impact that it has on the competitiveness of the SABC. I think that is something that I suppose will be dealt with in detail when we have the engagements a bit later on with the members. Sorry to have to take the committee back. Just as the SABC started with the presentation, I was informed that a board member of the MCA wanted to add to the presentation. Ms. Mata, Adela Togna. If you are going to be adding, I'll give you 2 minutes to do that before we go to our next presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So I just want to add from a board perspective that FDA and following on from the FDA, the commissioner, the public broadcasting need to have a very symbiotic relationship around the community media sector and the FWC. The MBDA as an entity is really just a funding agency and a research agency for media diversity, but it's the impact of the role that we play is much broader in the community media sector. And we've started conversations with the SABC and other broadcasters, but in particular the SABC, because of its mandate around content sharing and how to add value and how to unlock the economy of content production at the local level, because it's something the SABC has a challenge with. How do we build a production capacity and strengthen local both in the sense of the public broadcaster, which has a national mandate, but also regional spread through its radio stations, but then also the community media, radio stations, the digital media, a traditional publishing organization. So whilst the committee is receiving one-on-one presentations, I think it's important to look at the economy and the ecosphere of broadcasting as a whole and look at how the SABC and the community media sector are intrinsically connected. And it's something that the MBDA's current research process is going to amplify towards sustainability, but also towards shared content and the strengthening of platforms. Because I think some of the challenges SABC is having, on an even greater scale, local broadcasters, local community broadcasters are facing. So I just wanted to add that from a high level, that the role of the public broadcaster, the role of community media in creating relevant local content, in addressing its mandate towards public information is crucial. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that addition, emphasizing the importance of collaboration so that we can ensure sustainability of the public broadcaster. Can we please have the next presentation from the Independent Producers Organization? I have on the program Mr. Nimrod Diva and Mr. Rehad Desai. I'll hand over to you to start your presentation. Thank you.
Hello. Nimrod, can you share the screen?
Yes, I'll do that. Slide, please. It's gone.
Okay, let's get going while everyone tries to fix it up. The IPO is a very broadly representative national organization of the TV and film sector. It represents and protects the remote interests and needs of producers. It currently represents over 70% of working producers in South Africa. It strives towards creating an empowered, transformed and representative film and TV industry. It's committed to an advancement of sustainable and conducive environment for producers, creating opportunities for the full value chain of workers across the sector. And our key aim here is the plurality and diversity of voice, which is a pillar of the SABC public broadcast mandate. This is part of the reason why much of the work went over was sourced with the attempt to turn the state broadcaster into a truly public broadcaster. I want to move on to the SABC turnaround strategy. We believe it's credible, it's comprehensive, and most importantly, it's finally being executed. As I say, the independent producers create the majority of the SABC's programming. This is not through some commercial imperative, but it's also, again, to bolster the plurality and diversity of voice, which sits at the center of the seeing the public broadcaster as a cornerstone for our developing democracy. The content aspect of it is key. Programming is queen. Content is queen. And we need to make sure what is needed to make this happen. We're seeing less and less local content on our screens because of the financial constraints. It's not cheap. We support the SABC's plan to increase its spend on content to primarily entertain, inspire, and inform audiences. If we can do this, this is no easy task to do all three in across the different genres. It will drive advertising revenue. It will be able to hold its audience share, and in turn, continue to meet its mandate goals. The turnaround strategy. Again, we welcome the plans to boost content, benchmark costs for production to market rates, and reward artists for their efforts more fairly than they are. The price per minute, the cost per minute that goes over to the independent production sector has really failed over the last 10 years keep up with inflation in any meaningful way. In other words, we've seen a real cost cutting happening at the expense of artists, of directors, producers, writers, actors, and so on. But in order to do this, we believe the SABC must address the elephant in the room, an out-of-control wage bill. Now just look at this, honourable members and comrades. There's the 11% total expenses is spent by ETV on their wage bill. 12% of Mnet, which now has a massive market share on their total expenses. And three times that amount more is spent by the SABC on their wage bills. The SABC to date is only spending 22% on content. Now, if we see this primarily as a service provider, a critical service for the nation, for the underserved elements, parts of our populace, you know, police. You know, we have 50% of people living beneath the poverty line. Another 30% of people living on a monthly income of less than 4,000 rand a month. This certainly needs clear interrogation. Just to highlight that point, let's look at what's happened over the last 17 years. I mean, you can see it's gone up and up and up, and during Cloudy's era, it shot up massively. We are now at a ridiculous amount of money being spent on its OPEX, on its operating costs. This something seriously has to be done, and we have to empower the SABC to be able to do this. And that, in our view, is an eyes-on, hands-off view from the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. As we say, it's unsustainable and unnecessary given the competition's cost structures. And unfortunately, the SABC is forced to compete with other free-to-air, commercial free-to-air entities. The turnaround plan makes every effort to find other ways to raise revenue and cut costs. But with the pressures, the planned losses of 1.5 million this year, an advertising collapse due to COVID cutbacks on spend, it's very clear to us the SABC has run out of options. Of course, the retrenchment should be a last resort, say, opponents of the Section 189 process. But it's clear, long ago, we've reached a point where it's no longer avoidable. How do we solve the wage bill crisis? Well, when we're talking about saving jobs by stopping the Section 189 process, we're really talking about saving jobs only at the SABC. We are forgetting about the thousands of jobs that have already been lost in the private sector due to the crises, the multiple crises that have been impacting on the SABC over the last 10 years. And who suffers? Again, it's the creative sector. There has already been a bloodbath of jobs lost primarily by those who actually create and produce content that keeps the SABC alive. From its heyday, where the SABC was working with 200 independent production companies, that has now gone down to 60, many of whom have only been able to keep their contracts in place and make them viable by taking, you know, 100, 200, 300 episodes and so on by economies of scale. This has led to a concentration and centralization of work amongst the fewer companies, the bigger companies, and this has seen the massive undermining of the huge gains that the SABC had made in terms of working with more creatives, black companies. We've got an active middle management of the SABC that also needs to be trimmed, surely. Or will it again be the independent production sector that must bear the full brunt of the SABC's multiple crises? We believe it's critical that content is privatised to boost revenue, audiences and meet mandates. If we are concerned for jobs, we must push for investment in content, which not only serves the nation, but helps the SABC become financially viable, assuming that we have the talent inside the SABC to produce content which again meets the three critical areas: education, inspiration, action. If content budgets and that is no easy feat, that balance, and you know, to produce that balance in an entertaining way, we need fully skilled and professional staff. There's been a juniorization of staff at the SABC for a number of years. we need to reverse that process where we have fully experienced and qualified people ensuring that our content meets those key criteria. We don't do this, we face a continued, very dangerous downward spiral of the public broadcaster. I'd like now to hand over to the Nimrod Jiva, the co-chair of the IPO.
Thank you, Riyadh, and thank you, everyone. So this is really a dynamic we are concerned about as the independent production sector. It's the downward spiral of content budget cuts. And what we've seen happening over the last few years is gross underinvestment in new content. That leads to smaller audiences as people choose competitors and alternatives. Those smaller audiences in turn lead to lower advertising revenue because what the SABC can offer in terms of eyeballs is less attractive. That forces in turn the SABC to cut costs in general, and very often that falls very much onto the content side because that's in a sense the most discretionary part of the SABC budget, which leads again to an underinvestment in content, and that vicious circle continues. And that's what we've seen and what we are trying to break as the SABC goes into a proper turnaround strategy. I think aside from revenue, cutting content budgets also reduces SABC's abilities to meet its very, very important national and public mandated goals. It's particularly important now, and we can see why a state, a developmental state, and a functional public broadcast is vital for South Africa's well-being during something like a COVID crisis. I think that relevance becomes even more apparent. We have less public service content on health, for example, importance of vaccinations for children, even during COVID. We have less content budgets for debates and documentaries, and these are all very, very important public mandate issues that suffer because the SABC underinvests in content. Another very important part is education content, particularly when schools look closed and kids need to catch up on missed lessons. And that is heartbreaking that SABC is not in a position to do more on that. Finally, less fresh content also means fewer people glued to their screens and more people going out and on social distancing. So good content is a part of a kind of public health benefit that the COVID crisis would call for. And finally, and one of the aspects, certainly one that we're concerned about, is the impact that it's had on artists. And we can see this here in the change in salaries versus content prices over the last 13 years. So what we have in the dark green at the top is the cumulative real increase in salaries at the SABC. Now, I should start off by saying there's no principled objection to people at the SABC getting paid well, getting paid fairly, having their wages go up. But it's a question of what the situation is, what the sustainability of those increases is, and what the opportunity costs of those increases have been. And as you can see, over the last 13 years, SABC employees have had a 31.4% real increase in their cumulative salaries. At the same time, what we see in the light green at the bottom is the decrease, the real decrease, in the price paid to the independent production sector for content. And you can see the cumulative effect there is actually mind-blowing. What the production sector has to work with per minute of televised content is 55% less than it was 13 years ago. So if you imagine your salary being cut in half and what that would affect in terms of your livelihood and your ability to look after your family, you get a sense of what 55% really means. And that doesn't just affect the independent production sector and writers and actors who we see on Twitter crying out for help because of
down is necessary. This is key. The executive must be given the independence that's allowed to it by the legislation to complete the execution of its turnaround strategy to ensure that we have sustainability of the SABC and the wider industry, which feeds the SABC with important content, providing that plurality and diversity of more voices, as I said earlier. The SABC's independence in operational and other matters must be safeguarded. We urge Parliament to support this process, its turnaround plans. Calls for the dissolution of the board from certain quarters are highly irresponsible and add to undue political pressure on the board. The public deserves nothing less than a stable board after years and years of chaos. This chaos began in the transition from the Becky era to the transition that occurred inside the ANC from Mbeki to Zuma. And then it was compounded very deeply by the economic crisis of 2008. And now it's continuing. It cannot be used as a political football, comrades. It is clear they are motivated. These people are motivated by a desire to stop the board's process to comply with important Treasury conditions regarding the wage bill and the urgent need to stabilise the broadcaster financially, which we believe will save jobs for all in the medium term. We cannot have a situation where it's in the interest of some to have a weak SABC when we have a very strong corporate sector, which meanwhile is continuing to survive and indeed thrive at most. We know the massive size of Mnet and DStv and the powers behind ETV. We've got to ask, have some people a clear interest in keeping the SABC weak, and if so, for what purpose? Finally, it is well known we have a pandemic which has ripped our society asunder and is now creating very big internal problems for the ruling party. And, millions, 3 million people, it is reported, have lost jobs. Many are still in recovery, my wife included. There is a clear need for programming and debate around how to deal with this pandemic on a societal level. If we are to believe the words of our president, that the communities and people themselves are the biggest resource that we have in combating this pandemic, then we need to make sure that the SABC is fit for purpose. It has had an adverse impact of COVID-19 on revenue, and we see what that is estimated at. We urge all interested parties, DOC and DAC and other important ministries here, to allow the broadcaster to survive this period and to prevent further cuts to content budgets and consequent job losses throughout the content creation value chain. We thank you and wish you well in further deliberations.
Thank you so much, Riyad. Thanks for that presentation, Riyad and your colleague. I messed up the program a bit, so I'm going to go back to the SOS coalition. As you prepare to fly to your presentation, just to summarize the Independent Producers Association presentation, it's often said that there can be no SABC or
members, colleagues, and everybody else who's watching from home. We are the SOS Support Public Broadcasting Coalition, and yeah, let me quickly share our presentation. Let's see. Can you see it?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great.
I will begin. If you cannot see it, please indicate on the...
Right, there we go. Thank you. So...
You may proceed.
Thank you, Jane. So the SOS Coalition is really a civil society organization. We were born as a campaign in the early 2000s, 2008 roundabout, specifically to save the SABC from imminent collapse at the time. Sad to see that even though a lot has been done since then, we are still trying to support the public broadcaster. And we really focus on particular areas, specifically around strengthening the realization of the goals of the South African Constitution, looking at the SABC's institutional autonomy, in other words, independence from commercial, government, and other political party interests. We want to see SABC programming that is underpinned by principles of credibility, reliability, variety, and balance across the spectrum. And obviously, we want to see a full range of South African voices and perspectives being reflected on the public broadcaster, because that's what we believe public broadcasting is about.
I'm not sure if it's just my network, but...
Yeah? Can you not hear me?
Hi, Tutu, it's Jeremy Ngozi. I can hear you from my side, although I'm also experiencing network challenges, but I think Abogile is one even worse, because I can hear you from my side. I'm sure everyone else can hear you except the facilitator, which is not right, though.
Yeah. Should I continue or
proceed? It must be my network. Proceed.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jane. So, in a nutshell, that's who the SOS Coalition is. The focus of this presentation is really going to be about sharing SOS principles that were developed while we were trying to answer the question around how to really move the SABC into the future in a sustainable way. I'm going to really just speak to five critical issues, even though there's a lot more that can be said. But I think these are the ones that, if there was targeted interventions, that we could see really big benefits from just dealing with these in the short to medium term. So the first one is around the digital public service media ecosystem. What we're speaking about here is basically just recognizing the fact that there's been a real fundamental shift from traditional public service broadcasting, and even the concept of broadcasting in and of itself has changed. We're in an integrated multi-platform media space, even though that might not be the daily reality for some of our people. We do know that we are in a space where we can't just speak of broadcasting in traditional analog terms. We do foresee that, you know, if we are in a digital public media ecosystem, that there should be a continuation of the three tiers of broadcast services. By that, we're speaking to public, commercial, and community, even though in this sense it would be audiovisual content services and so on. And particularly because of the fact that we have this public mandate, we have developed goals as a nation and even as a region. And so to collapse those three tiers at this stage, we don't think that that's something that would be beneficial for the public. So having said that, we also think that in a digital space, the SABC has to be in a position to make all of its content available for free. So whether you have a big pocket or not, you shouldn't have to now have to create a new budget line item to finance your entertainment and information needs. You should be able to access SABC channels as freely as you are able to do so now. We also foresee that in this kind of an ecosystem, we We need an integrated, a single regulator that basically looks at the entire integrated, interconnected ICT space, but also audiovisual content space, because it's a converged environment. We can't nitpick on the basis of platform, on the basis of service or content or infrastructure, and think that we can regulate it in pockets and silos. That doesn't make sense anymore. And so we need to be looking progressively at ways to manage it in a more coherent way. And then obviously in that space, because of the fact that historically public service media and public broadcasting was based on, the motivation for it came from the spectrum and the fact that analog spectrum is limited. And so, you want public interest content and you want it to be on public broadcasting spaces. And that's fine. But we also feel that in the digital environment, there is space for public service media content. So the move from an analog broadcasting platform space should not be the precursor for, the dissolution of public service media, because the function of public service media and the need that it serves at this point is going to remain. And we're always going to need information. We're always going to have a need for public for information, for education, and even for the purposes of nation building. So we do need to create a caveat where we can safeguard the space for PSM content. So when we speak of this independent converged regulator, what is it that we're envisioning? We're envisioning a single converged independent body, free of commercial and political interference. We see a Chapter 9 institution being strengthened. So we have specific inclusions that we would love to share, around sections 189, 193, and 194 that we feel would better safeguard this independent regulating body's independence. We also feel that there needs to be increased funding for the regulator. We need to retain its licensing and administrative fees, and also its independent research capacity. And these are particularly important because the digital environment is a very rapidly changing one, and you need evidence-based research to sort of, back up whatever policy and regulatory changes that you're going to make. So if you're going to make meaningful micro-policy developments, you kind of have to have very strong research capacity to back that up. Also, alongside that is the issue of content regulation, which we are already struggling with in South Africa, as you can see, with the online content regulation. And, it's not always clear which way to go, whether it seems like we're over-regulating or under-regulating. What we do know for sure is that the current regulatory and co-regulation regime, where everything is technology-specific, platform-specific, it's about websites versus social media, it's unworkable, content is fluid, it travels across platforms, it travels across spaces. People who were not publishers before are publishing now. And so we do need to develop a new co-regulatory scheme that is a fit for purpose, that is not platform agnostic, that is not limited by who created the content, how they created it. All of those things would need to be included, obviously, but we need to make sure that it enables the public and it enables other content producers to benefit the most from all the potential that the internet and internet technologies offer, while at the same time safeguarding vulnerable, safeguarding, the rights to privacy, rights to freedom of expression, as well as, children and other marginalized communities also being given a space. So it's a complex one, but I think we need to start the work of coming together rather than trying to evolve different institutions and different co-regulatory mechanisms individually. And then obviously the big one, which is funding for public broadcasting. Funding for public broadcasting really is not something that is easy for any nation. I think even in well-developed economies, we do know that every once in a while there's a debate about whether or not the public broadcasting service is well-funded, how is it being funded. Sources of funding are always contested. And I don't think that that's going to change just purely because of the nature of the kind of programming that public service broadcasters are supposed to deliver. Nonetheless, we do know that here at home, over the last two decades, case. We've really seen systemic failures of management, corporate governance collapses that have really entrenched what would have been, you know, problems that we can address in a nimble and very pointed fashion, and they've become really massive. So one of the things that we think needs to happen and that we need to really move on is funding the public service mandate from the public purse. It's not a popular view purely because of the economic state of the country, the fact that the purse is almost flat, but we believe that this is something that was not done in the first place from 2 decades ago, and even from when the SABC became a public broadcaster. So we need to really look for ways to enact this. And specifically because we want to fund the mandate programming. So programming that is not just commercial program, but programming that is specifically linked to the public interest service mandate. The other point here is, you know, there have been fundamental market structure changes that we just haven't kept up with. And I think we all agree that it's time for, you know, for some significant changes to be made. The question is in which way and in which areas. We have some suggestions, that we think might help to address some of these. The first is that the SABC's funding model needs to be a mixed one, not because of some, you know, trying to be normative in the sense of, you know, public broadcasting must be funded a specific way, not because of any ideological position, but purely because of the reality of the environment that we operate in. You do need a mixture of advertising, sponsorship, and public broadcasting fees, which is what we currently call license fees. You need those multiple sources because you cannot be over-reliant on any one type of funding source at some point. We feel is going to compromise the independence of the institution. And so a mixed funding model at this point still seems to be the most appropriate way to proceed. When we were talking about the public purse funding public mandate, here we are specifically speaking to parliamentary appropriations. And by here, we are speaking to basically a budget increase that, you know, is in line with the ruling party's own resolutions around how to fund public service media. And we would suggest that funding be ring-fenced specifically for education, for news, for health-related programming. Right now, it would be for COVID-19-related programming, but also to meet the developmental needs of the population, you know, so that we don't have children sitting at home who don't have laptops or any broadband and they're missing out on school. So that's where that funding will be directed towards. The other issue is, you know, the local content fund, which has been spoken about for years and years and really hasn't materialized in any meaningful way. This is a local content fund would be something that we feel would address some of the gaps and, you know, strengthen the bridge around how local content and public service content is created and is also distributed across the platform, so that it's not just going to the SABC or just going to somebody else, but that it's spread across from community level broadcasters all the way to the public broadcaster and that's broadcasting at a national level. And the point of this would also be to strengthen and develop from the grassroots up, you know, up and coming local content producers who haven't yet found, you know, a way in or are in regional areas that we just don't get to. So these are some of the things that could be addressed if we could just establish and finance a local content fund. Then we wanted to speak to the issue of the SABC's current segmentation into public and public commercial divisions. In our view, we need to change this through policy and legislative changes. At this stage, it seems as though the public channels are doing way better than commercial channels. So it just makes sense from a commercial perspective as well as from an ideological perspective to simply call it a public broadcaster that has public broadcasting channels, radio stations, platforms, and specifically focuses on that public mandate. We think that will eliminate at least some of the issues around the tensions between public and commercial that the SABC has to contend with now. And obviously that would have to be enabled through policy and legislative changes to make sure that even if we said the SABC was wholly a public broadcaster with no public commercial divisions, that it was able to respond, because the environment is going to require it to be nimble and to be flexible and to respond accordingly. So yeah, and then obviously in terms of the funding for the public broadcaster, once these things are in place, the SABC itself would still have, you know, the responsibility to spend the majority of its funding on programming, rather than management and, you know, salaries and other overheads. That imbalance is just not something that's going to help the public broadcaster become sustainable. So it's something that we need to address. Then we have a proposal around some pro-competitive and pro-public broadcasting principles. Here we're looking at ways to strengthen the sector as a whole, to look at ways in which we can make it more enabling, we can make it more open, more inclusive, but also so that there's growth and opportunity for all players and not just the entrenched players. So you'll see the first set of proposals there specifically speaking to DSTV and how we can, you know, push certain interventions around DSTV and how the SABC deals with the DSTV in order to open up the space a little more and sort of end this dominance that is causing other players not to have space. We have four proposals here, which might sound radical to others, but we feel these would be massive short-term to medium-term wins that would definitely go a long way in ensuring the sustainability of the SABC. And the first one is about the payment of commercial rates. Must carry was good for the time when it was developed, but now it has to be must carry, must pay. You cannot reap the benefit of, you know, products that you didn't invest in when they were being made. So that needs to end. We also would like to propose that DSTV collect the public broadcasting fee, because its subscribers are already paying for a subscription fee, and they collect this monthly or annually. And so we don't think it would be too much of a stretch to simply say, okay, get into an arrangement, talk about it commercially, and find out how you could collect the public broadcasting fee on top of the subscription fee that you are currently collecting. We know that this is possible also because we've seen DSTV do this with Vodacom. There was a period of time when Vodacom subscribers were able to, contract holders especially, were able to pay 99 Rand extra in order to view Showmax. And so, you know, it's not a far-fetched idea. We would just have to kink out the specifics around it. The other issue here is around the scale of allowable advertising revenue. And here we're specifically wanting to address the sort of the perception of double dipping that exists, because subscription broadcasters are effectively collecting subscription fees at the same time also collecting advertising revenues, whereas ETV and SABC and any other free-to-air television for that matter are only just focused on trying to collect revenues from advertising. And we know that the advertising pie has shrunk quite significantly, and so we need to look for ways to make sure that there's an equitable distribution, or at least opportunity for raising revenues from all corners and from all available potential revenue streams. The other is around, you know, creating, well, trying to using the DSTV decoder as an essential facility, making it interoperable and making it available to other subscription broadcasters at a reasonable cost-based, rate, in order to facilitate competition, but also in order to move the country along, because as, you know, the SABC presenter was also saying, we don't want a situation where every household now has to go and buy a special decoder for every specific service that they want to watch. Audiences did not ask for these technological changes to happen. The changes are here. So broadcasters are in the business of broadcasting. We should be able to look for ways to enable better access for all audiences, in spite of what their economic and social backgrounds are. And this is one way of doing it, of bridging the gap between those who would otherwise be left behind by the digital divide, and also in terms of, you know, creating an opportunity for new entrants to enter into the market, because we can't keep singing about one player having a dominant position and then we don't enable opportunities for others to come in. And then obviously the last point is around over-the-top technology or, you know, streaming services. Here we're speaking specifically to platforms like Facebook, Google, Netflix, and Amazon Prime. I know that a lot of people currently think that because we have low adoption rates, that we shouldn't really worry too much about it, but the truth is these players are already here. South Africans are watching this content. Independent producers are looking to produce content for these platforms. We need to figure out which are the appropriate taxation mechanisms in order for these players to contribute to our economy, but also to contribute to our local production sectors, because everybody else does. And also to look for ways in which we can create a more inclusive space. So we know that the big thing that's slowing down adoption of these platforms currently is the fact that broadband is not available everywhere. But I think once it is, we're going to see rapid adoption of what is seemingly middle-class technologies and platforms, and it's going to be ubiquitous. And at that point, it will be too late to demand that these people start contributing to our local development goals and our local economy, as well as our local production sectors. So we need to start mapping out ways to figure out what are the appropriate mechanisms to get contribution into our economy and into our production sectors, whether it's through taxation, whether it's through regulation, or any other ways that we can make sure that these guys are contributing as much as everybody else is. The next point is around migration to digital. In terms of digital migration, you know, there was a lot of talk about how digital migration is going to deliver the digital dividend, and that obviously has its own associated benefits, specifically to the public. From where we're standing, the delays over the past 10 to 15 years, I think at this point, technological changes, market changes, for us, this means that DTT might just be dead in the water. It might just no longer be an option. And the tragedy is that there's been a lot of investment into it. We're still sitting with set-top boxes in postal services, warehouses, the last time I checked. We need to move and review this whole process. The market is not going to deliver DTT to the people. The state alone is not going to be able to deliver DTT to people. And yet, globally, everyone is in a digital environment, and I think it's a disservice to the public for us to continue to play into this slow process that goes nowhere, slowly. We have some suggestions around that, and specifically our suggestions are focused on trying to deliver these objectives. We're looking for a solution that delivers universal, affordable access for all. The digital environment has to be intentionally made inclusive. Otherwise, it will replicate our current inequalities. It will replicate our current exclusionary systems. So we have to intentionally build in affordability and universal access. The other is about safeguarding the space for public service content, as I've already said. The ability to deliver a wide choice of high-quality content and how that would feed into, you know, developing the local creative sector. We have to look for ways to intentionally support the poor, the excluded, the disadvantaged, those who are sitting on the fringes of society, who will not be able to pay monthly fees for platforms, for devices, and all of that. And then obviously, to manage the digital dividend so that it is used optimally, because that spectrum, once it's released, is still, you know, supposed to be used for the public good rather than the good of a few. So it should fund local media, and it should benefit the public as a whole. Those are the objectives that we feel need to be kept in mind in the review of the DTT migration process, because the current process, it's not working, it's not going to work. So how should we go ahead? How should we proceed? We need to review the whole project, essentially. We need to consider that we might have to shelve some of this, because even with the current rollout of DTT, our information is that we're only reaching nearly just 500,000 of people who are currently on DTT, and the rest are underserved. So we need to look at ways in which, you know, the policy can be amended in order to allow for multiple types of deliveries, not just DTT only, not just satellite only, but ways to enable broadcasters to migrate all of their services onto a plethora of digital platforms, and there needs to be interoperability, and there needs to be platform neutrality. Otherwise, the cost and the negative impact of not having that is going to fall onto the public, and the public, frankly, is already carrying too much of the fallout of not even being on digital spaces. So we need to migrate everybody, and we need to be open to having different platforms that are able to be used for everybody, accessible to everybody in an inclusive manner, not just the audiences, but also for other players who want to enter the market. And then obviously that can only happen alongside the delivery of fast, cheap, reliable broadband. We cannot overemphasize how important it is for government to start moving on delivering internet to our people. COVID has shown right now why we need to have done this yesterday rather than tomorrow. Lastly, we wanted to really reiterate the issue of the separation of powers. And specifically here, we wanted to speak to the PPC's role around, you know, exercising legislative and oversight role over the SABC and holding it accountable. And we also wanted to remind the honorable members about implementing the recommendations of the ad hoc committee report of 2016-17. Three key issues that could be dealt with immediately would see a significant shift for the SABC as well as the whole broadcasting sector. Reviewing the funding model, that was a recommendation in the report. Amendment of legislation, we're glad to hear that something is coming. We're looking forward to engaging in those processes. And also to protect the SABC from undue encroachment by the minister or the deputy minister. The minister's role is different from the role that Parliament exercises. And we feel that if these three things are done, it would strengthen not only the SABC, but also Parliament's own oversight role, so that we don't have another two decades of either parliamentary inaction or corporate governances at the SABC. We need to normalize the relationship between the SABC and the PPC so that it's not just an adversarial one for the sake of adversary, but rather a collaborative one for the sake of the public interest. And then obviously in terms of the powers of the minister, I really would like to refer everybody to the Matlojane judgment in the case of SOS Coalition and others versus the SABC. That judgment makes it very clear that the effect of Section 1311 of the Broadcasting Act is to confer onto the board exclusive power to control the affairs of the SABC. This role is not about micromanaging the SABC's decisions. It's not about controlling how they do what they do. It's about providing support to the SABC so that it can meet its public interest mandate. We need to focus on that. The minister needs to focus on policy making. The minister needs to focus on getting the entire sector into the digital age in a non-siloed way, in a holistic manner that takes people along, rather than to focus on trying to decide what the SABC must do next. The law allows for the SABC to be held accountable by Parliament, by the public, and there are clear processes in terms of the CCMA, the Labour Relations Act, the Labour Courts are there to deal with any tensions that might arise between the SABC, its staff, and its unions. Those relationships also have to be normalised. We can't keep politicising every process every time it comes up. The staff, the management, as well as the unions also need to start using the available legislation and policy-making frameworks in order to engage with each other in a very collaborative and non-destructive manner. So that was just something that we wanted to remind everybody of. It's really important that we focus on our different roles and our respective responsibilities in order to give the South African public the public broadcaster that they deserve, but also to create a media system that is inclusive, that is digitally, you know, nimble and flexible, and allows for growth, allows for opportunity for not just the public, but also for any other players that want to enter the sector. And I think that's where we will end it for today. thank you all for your time and for listening to us.
Thank you so much, Tutu, for that insightful presentation. I think what I picked up from your presentation is something that I always ask: when data falls, when we deal with the broadband question, what will rise in terms of improving the regulation of the sector, especially in terms of the competition? Would we be able to deal with and dislodge the big four in terms of the competitive advantage that they currently have in the African markets in particular? Thank you for that presentation. Last but not least, I'll hand over to Ms. Nadia Buboya from the National Association of Broadcasters. Nadia, as you come on board, because this is a session for lawmakers, there's a common thread that I've heard in all the presentation that talks to a stagnant regulatory and legislative formulation process. It's not adapting as quickly. Maybe you can also take us through what are some of the things that legislators need to look out for. Because I remember when the EDA bill was in the public domain, it was actually dubbed the convergence legislation. So if we were effective in formulating that legislation and we were aware that the market is converging, it's changing, what is it that maybe we could have done better in the formulation of that legislation to ensure that we don't have the same questions that we are currently grappling with right now? I hope you'll be able to deal with that in your presentation. Over to you.
Thanks so much, Abungile, and thanks to all our colleagues on the line and to honourable members of Parliament. It's really great to be with you again this morning. We made a presentation to Parliament a couple of weeks ago, and so we're not going to cover some of the old territory. I am very pleased today to be joined by our regulatory and policy manager as well at the NAB, Tawana and Cheki. So the two of us will be taking you through this presentation. Madam Chair, I think that the one thing we've realized is that we're certainly not short of research, analysis, benchmarking, cost modeling, etc. I think what we're really short of is making some really firm, bold decisions and taking the entire industry forward in an environment that we've all heard has become increasingly disruptive, and where, you know, regulated services such as the broadcasting industry are competing with totally unregulated platforms and services. So Tawana is going to run the slide deck for me. Tawana, you can move on to the next two slides. A quick overview, Madam Chair and colleagues. The NAB is a voluntary association. We're a membership organization. We do represent all three tiers of broadcasters, and we're fully funded. That we created the BCCSA in 1993. We also have been at the forefront of representing this industry on several policy and regulatory processes, to the very one you mentioned earlier around the convergence legislation of the ECA, etc. So our members include the public broadcaster and, of course, all the licensed commercial radio stations, the licensed television broadcasters, a number of community stations, as well as a community television member. We also have in our membership Centec, Orbicom, several associates, which include the MBDA, NAMESA, Arena Holdings, etc. These are just a snapshot of our membership base. And our mission really is to advance the interests of the broadcasting industry. And I stress this is the interest of the regulated broadcasting industry that hold licenses that have been issued by the regulator, and they have to comply and adhere to very onerous license conditions, because yes, they do have access to the national frequency plan, which is a national asset, and they therefore have to make sure that they make good on that, providing a range of good quality content, of course. This just is a snapshot of the kind of work we do. I think you might be familiar with that. And one of our key mandates is also to continue to foster effective stakeholder relationships and engagements, and to conduct specialized research. So today, Madam Chair, we are really going to approach this at a much higher level. It's great listening to all the other speakers who have taken us through certainly the historic context as well of how we find ourselves in 2020 talking about the public broadcaster. But to remind you that we represent all three tiers of broadcasters, and thank you to one of the MBDA board members who raised this and the contextual requirements to look at the system and the ecosystem of broadcasting in our country. So we're going to really look at this at a more macro overview level. what I want to just remind all of us is that every single tier of licensed broadcaster in this country is competing for audience revenue and is competing for audiences. That's the system. Every single tier is impacted by unregulated content platforms. And we've heard the SABC talking to this as well as the IPO and now just recently Dudu at SOS. So we'll look at the regulatory framework, the content regulation and the investment in content. We'll just look very quickly at the contributions that this industry makes to the national fiscus. We'll look at the core public broadcasting principles and its mandate, and we'll just reflect on some of the key challenges facing all of us. So just to go forward, a reminder that, you know, the underpinning and the key framework is, of course, the ECA, and Chapter 9 spells out very clearly the mandate and the requirements of the regulator to create an enabling environment for a robust and sustainable industry to thrive. Those are just some of the key sections within that Chapter 9. And I go down to the fact that at the end of the day, this is about content. So the ICASA's 2016 regulations, when they reviewed the content regulations, had set the requirements on local content for the public, for public services, for television at 65%, for radio at 60%, for community TV at 65%, and radio at 60%, for commercial television at 45%, and radio at 35%, and subscription TV at 15%, and radio at 20%. We need to remind ourselves that this is about relevant content, it's about content that resonates, it's about content that's compelling, but importantly it's about content that enables and empowers all of us as citizens to engage in our democracy, to be able to access useful information, education, entertainment, edutainment, etc., so that we can build this democracy, as it is a core and key pillar of our democracy. So a reminder again that ICASA was established, obviously, it's during the period of the IDA, the former IDA, and obviously as these two entities, SATRA and the IBA, merged, becoming ICASA. We need to remind ourselves of you know, Section 192 of the Constitution that states that national legislation must enable an independent authority to regulate broadcasting in the public interest to ensure fairness and a diversity of views broadly representing South African society. I think we need to remind ourselves that every single one of us sitting here on this call are South Africans who are uniquely placed and located where we are, that our experiences are sometimes similar, sometimes extremely dissimilar, that broadcasting is able to reflect on our reality and reflect on who we are and how we engage as a society. Of course, we've seen that the ICASA Act also follows through on that independence. When we talk of content, and Madam Chair, this is really your area of expertise. We thought we'd just remind ourselves of the way that content is regulated in our country. The FBB, of course, classifies films, games, and print publications. We know that ICASA and the FBB have signed an MOU in 2016 to create some uniformity around content regulation. I've mentioned already that there is the BCCSA in place. And I just wanted to stress, the NAB has, right at the onset of all these debates, been totally engaged in the challenges facing the public broadcaster. So in 2018, and we'll reflect on this later, the former DOC, which is now the DCDT, also hosted a colloquium on public broadcasting. And those of you who attended will remember that there was quite a large stakeholder base across the NGO space to government, etc. A reminder again that in this three-tier system, at the end of it all, the funding model is critical, and we've had this debate, yes, for more than 20 years, that the funding is about a mixed model of advertising, grants, sponsorships, subscriptions, license fees, in particular for the public broadcaster, that this is centrally around audiences and centrally around the content that is able to drive audiences, that is able to deliver that to advertisers who ultimately, you know, are funding this entire scheme. We'll move on to the next slide. Thanks, Fawana. I'll put off my video in case we're having issues with bandwidth. So what I wanted us to just look at as well is, in terms of content and contributions to content, we did a study, and we've shared this booklet with members, honourable members in Parliament. It's our State of the Broadcasting Industry Report. And we just wanted to look at the contributions that were made to the fiscus, certainly on the television side. $2.32 billion in contributions that include license fees, levies, and other contributions that broadcasters make. And you've also heard earlier the MDDA talking about the contributions that commercial broadcasters make to the MDDA fund as well. The next slide, we're also just looking at the contributions then made by radio, over $700 million. And remember, this data is 2018. Of course, this would have increased. And so it's another reflection of how this entire industry supports the national fiscus as well, and that it is part of a key part of our economy in the country. What we also wanted to stress was the investment in content, and I think in 2018 it had moved up from $4 billion in 2014 to almost $7.5 billion in terms of investment into local content in South Africa. Here's the clip on that. And I think that this is important to recognize, is that the entire model and the funding base is really to drive the investment into good quality product as well, but just in a diverse range of content. And I think we need to recognize that this industry has been at the forefront of driving that content development and creation. Thanks, Lorna. We can flip forward. We can skip that. Thanks. And so, just some of the key principles of public broadcasting, and we're very familiar with this. When people talk public broadcasting, it's always about Lord Reed. But these are core principles and values that certainly, would not have changed dramatically. If anything, it consistently is about a space for free expression and open debate, to cater to all tastes, interests, issues of plurality and diversity. And these are words that are expressed consistently in legislation through all the discourse around this area of public broadcasting and just content in general, about serving minorities, and at the end of the day, again, about the competition in good programming rather than for the numbers. And I think this is the real challenge that we're all facing right now. Of course, it needs to be universally accessible and available. And, the thing is, how do you treat people as audiences and as citizens, not just consumers, when at the same time the entire model is around advertising revenue and around how we're able to find those revenue sources to continue to fund these services. I'm going to hand over to Tawana for the next few slides, and then I'll come to the bottom end and talk about some of the reflections going forward. Tawana, thank you.
Thanks very much. Good morning to the honorable members as well as guests and stakeholders in the industry. I'm going to keep my camera off because I'm having challenges with network on my side. So just to continue off from Nadia, where she was talking about the public broadcasting service principles, is given the fact that we are operating within a greater global environment, and whenever we talk about a South African broadcasting industry or South African public broadcaster, we need to be mindful of some of the international instruments and protocols, some of which South Africa has acceded to. These international protocols also are very important in giving guidance as to exactly what the role of a public broadcaster is, what we should be aspiring to. And therefore, when we are reviewing even the legislation and policy framework, we need to keep these principles in mind. And consistently, we will see that it also keeps, there's a lot of emphasis on the need to ensure that we've got good quality, diverse local programming, in line really with ensuring that there's nation building and to ensure that audiences are able to reflect on the content that is given. The content is educational content, is informative content, and is relatable content. And the only way that we see this can be attained is if there is adequate investment in ensuring that the public broadcaster is able to develop this particular type of content, and to the extent that it also needs to ensure that it's got the sufficient infrastructure to be able to be innovative, especially if there is the changing landscape as we see it now. The mandate of the public broadcaster is really spelled out in the Broadcasting Act, and I think the SABC's presentation and the preceding presentations have also extensively covered on these, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that. And as we know, from a funding point of view, the SABC does have multiple sources as far as funding and revenue is concerned, but these have to be reviewed to ensure that indeed the SABC is able to treat its viewers more as consumers I'd say to the extent that there's sponsorship, that sponsors should not have too much of control or determination of the type of content that we see. It really speaks to the importance of ensuring that when we therefore support the mandate of the public broadcasters in recognition of the critical role that it plays in developing nation building and democracy, it's therefore important that we ensure that as we review and seek to support the public broadcaster in its role to ensure that the nation is adequately educated and informed, there is that diversity when it comes to the content, there is media plurality, and most importantly, inclusiveness. It has to reflect the demographics of society as a whole, from the metropolitan area to people in the rural areas. It has to really be reflective of who we are as a South African nation. We've seen currently, even in the studies that we've recently conducted as the NAB, that there's that increasing trust that is building and increasing recognition in the credibility of content that is made available through broadcasting services, even in the rise of the digital age, even in the rise of citizen journalism. Consumers are turning more and more to broadcasting services, content and news on our platform because it is credible. It is guided by principles and codes such as the code of conduct that is administered by the CCCSA. And it's therefore critical that we support a public service broadcaster. It has been greatly emphasized that the issue of funding needs to be adequately reviewed and assessed to ensure that the SABC can be responsive. And especially when we consider the decline in advertising revenue, and this is not something that is unique to a public broadcaster. All broadcasters that are operating within the South African broadcasting framework are really feeling the pressure that is as a result of the decline in advertising revenue, as we see the proliferation of OTT and various online content services. And these online content services have begun to compete quite fiercely with audiences that come to the competition in relation to advertising revenue. Previously, we've had a lot of forums where the public broadcaster was the subject of consideration, and this was in line with the greater review of the audiovisual framework of South Africa, looking at the policy framework. And one of the most recent processes that we had was the 2018 colloquium that was held on the review of the public broadcaster, and it was noted that it does indeed have a critical role to play in building our democratic ethos as well as a human rights culture as espoused in the Constitution. And the Constitution talks about the right of freedom of expression, it talks about the right of access to information, and the role of the public broadcaster is quite critical in ensuring that those rights are actually realized. But these rights can only be realized if there's adequate funding, and adequate funding not only looking at content in itself, but to enable the public broadcaster to respond and be innovative, to continue to be relevant, especially as we've seen the rapid development in technology. We need to ensure that we are able to move collectively forward as a broadcasting industry. I'll hand over back to Nadia just to take us through some of the developments that we've been seeing, particularly with the proliferation of OTT content platforms and what those implications are for the broadcasting industry, as well as what our recommendations have been as the NAB.
Thanks, Tawana. So Madam Chair and colleagues, I mean, you know, we're all talking about over-the-top services. The reality is that it is definitely growing steadily in South Africa. Content is now being created specifically for Netflix, no longer for what we call traditional television. Of course, this does bring with it greater consumer choice, but to the points raised by earlier speakers, it is reliant on a robust broadband streaming service as well, and robust broadband and always on broadband, I think is a key issue. Interesting, as we, you know, all connected to this call, how we're all affected by networks and by the unfortunate reality of Eskom power stations going down, etc. So there's a lot that we need to still fix in our country for basic universal service access, stability of networks, etc. So the impact of OTTs on licensed broadcasters, obviously we're all feeling this. I know that, Madam Chair, you yourself at the FBB have been dealing with a lot of these OTT players in the environment. know, traditional broadcasters have, and we keep talking to this, have extremely onerous license conditions. They invest significantly, and we talked to that, and we showed you the data, certainly from the survey of the members within the NAB network. Local content, you know, has to be relevant, has to sustain audience share. Traditional broadcasters are now facing, you know, huge competition at all fronts. This is really, really pressurizing revenue streams. In turn, it's impacting on our ability to continue to invest. You know, we've seen the steady growth of these on-demand services, and we need to watch them very closely, of course, and they have to impact the way that policy interventions are made. We also are reminded of the 2015 ICT policy review report, where at the time, you know, policymakers said, for now, we'll wait and see. We'll see how this goes. We don't want to stifle innovation. We'll monitor this, etc. We also know that the ITU, you know, they've said policymakers are finding different paths to balancing innovation, investment, and competition. This is so true for us. How are we going to be able to balance the innovation, attract the investment that we so sorely need, and how are we going to deal with competition? We are in a huge economic recession. I mean, this predates COVID, which has just taken us even further down, but we are in an extremely tenuous political time in our country. So, you know, we're looking forward to seeing how the policymaker moves forward in terms of the entire ICT ecosystem. When we talk about partnerships and collaborations, Madam Chair, we're also talking about that across the platforms, and we're talking about that across technologies. We're also talking about the synergies between the telcos and the synergies with content providers. So where do we go to next? We've heard about the audiovisual white paper. We understand that it's going to be published imminently. It will address content regulation, institutional arrangements, and I think the SOAs gave quite a few reflections on how they see those institutional arrangements playing out. And also we'll revisit the overall licensing of, we believe, the entire system, and I think this is really important for us pathing a healthy course as we move forward. You know, as we look at what's on the horizon, and I've said, OTTs are growing, they're steadily growing. This impacts how regulated services are able to compete with unregulated services, and the issue of regulatory parity is at the forefront for all of us who sit in this industry holding licenses. The advertising landscape has shifted dramatically. You know, we consistently lamented the fact that we're seeing advertising revenues go to huge multinationals. We're looking for our domestic marketing and advertising fraternity to reinvest in what is local, in what is South African, in looking at South African platforms first, in finding a way, and if COVID has taught us anything, is that we've got to redouble and strengthen our efforts to work collaboratively in the best interests of the South African economy. These multi-platforms, you know, create huge competition. We're in a space now where it's my time, it's my screen, it's my price, and so I can package it the way I want to. Of course, this again is not true for the majority of South Africans, and this is what we've got to confront. In terms of radio, you know, what we've just seen, Madam Chair, is, you know, that the industry relies on audience measurement currency surveys. Because of COVID, there's been a huge impact. We can't actually go door to door and do research. The way in which we're going to be employing new methodologies and tools is really important. I know that the MDEA recently also had a huge engagement with the sector, and there's a lot of discussion around doing specific research that identifies or locates within the community sphere as well, and how do you do community-based audience measurement research as well. Although we've seen radio holding its own, there are obviously these online platforms, they're unregulated, there's obviously streaming services as well, but we need to look at this as I said, the entire ecosystem now, the disruption that's happening, and what this means for traditional services. Sustainability is absolutely critical. We've seen consolidation in other markets, we've seen deregulation in other markets. We have to ask ourselves those very tough questions of how far South Africa come 26, 27 years into our democracy, when the freeing of the airwaves happened, when the IBA started licensing community broadcasters, greenfield commercial stations, the first ever free-to-air service in ETV, where it regularized the entire policy and regulatory framework for broadcasting to enable robust, viable, and sustainable services. Well, the world has changed dramatically. And I think that as a former regulator, the one thing we all know is that we can never keep up with the pace of technology. It moves so quickly that by the time we start creating these policy and regulatory tools and mechanisms, quite frankly, it's too late. So often people are able to embed and entrench themselves, and by the time you're wanting to create a framework around that, it really is too late. I think those are the last slides. We're very happy to take any questions. We once again want to thank you and honourable members of Parliament for this lovely opportunity to engage. I'm sure we have to engage much, much more. I want to close by saying we've had these debates, we've had these deliberations for the last 20 years. Issues of the funding model, the production fund, the reorganising of the SABC. You know, as I said, we are not short of any of that. What we are short of is making those bold, firm decisions in the best interest of keeping the industry going, of ensuring that we have an industry that is vibrant for all three tiers, because the points that have been made are absolutely critical, is that every one of these tiers play a very specific role in society, that community broadcasters are right in the communities, dealing with the very detail of communities and how they function. That commercial players have a space, that the public broadcast is absolutely central to the entire scheme, and that as the NAB, we totally support a strong and totally credible, viable, and sustainable public broadcaster. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Nadia, for that insightful presentation. I can definitely assure members from our work at FPB that the OTT market is growing in South Africa. There are about 17 OTT players that we are currently engaging with as the FPB, and I think 7 of them have licensed. And if you look at the profile of those OTT players, which talks to the convergence issues that has been touched on by everyone, it is not from one sector. You get telcos, you get broadcasters that are entering the OTT market, and we are also seeing streaming platforms as well that are formed for that. And the competition is starting to strengthen, and definitely we need to up our ante in terms of the regulatory landscape in that framework. Now, honourable members, it's your opportunity to engage with the presentations. We do not have much time, but I think it would be important for you to ask questions to the presenters that have presented, make your inputs, provide insights should you wish to do so. I do not see anything on the chat. As already indicated, I can't see hands. So if you want to ask a question, please either the secretariat will indicate, or you indicate in the chat that you would want to engage with the presenters that we had today. Tembigosi, do you have anything from your side?
I am unfortunately. Has empty
they ever tried to lobby for support from municipalities in additional to advertise such as rental fee or low rental premises? If yes, is there any willingness for municipalities to work with you? The second question, Chair, during our select committee meeting with you in February this year, you mentioned that you will fill the position of the company secretary and the risk analyze so have you filled those positions? If no, why not? Lastly, I would like to find out from the MDDA on whether radio stations are still struggling to establish governance structure such board of director. If yes, what are the challenges? Chairperson, on SABC, I would like to ask the following question. On PFMA exception to reporting, you alluded that the SABC meets on monthly basis with the Department of Communication and the National Treasury. The question is, does the National Treasury and the Department of Communication agree with you that the SABC needs to be accepted from compliance with Section 52 of the PFMA? The last question on the SABC, you have mentioned in your presentation that the current policies and regulations imposed on SABC are not helping SABC to deliver. And the question is, have you ever engaged with the Department of Communication to assist you to review the policies that are not friendly to you? If yes, what is the attitude of the department about your proposal? There are many questions and I will pause for now and wait for the answer. I speak to Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. Can I request get all the members to ask questions and then we respond? Can we get Ms. Van Damme, please?
Thank you. Maria said hi. Connections of the dodgy. I don't have a question per se, but just to say that I would like the chair for arranging this. I think we need to do it more often, particularly to hear insights from civil society organizations that work in the sector that we are conducting oversight over. I don't think that us alone can have answers. So it is important for us to hear from these bodies. I don't have a question in that we are being lobbied, and I know that there's some issues that I agree with and others I don't agree with, and vice versa across each other party lines. So I think it is important for us to have a session to sit down as a committee to look through these proposals and come up plan. But we cannot continue in the way that we are currently doing business with SABC. Because as it does now, the SABC has requested additional funding from COVID relief funds. They are projecting a lot. So throwing money at the problem is not a solution. Right now, they're considering retrenching staff. I know that is a proposed, but if they don't return staff, the money is needed. So I think we need to sit down. I think we need to consider, in particular, be very considered and well thought out inputs from the SOS in particular. And I'd just like to say to the gentleman in the from the IBO, say that it is a very unfair characterization to say that Parliament has hands-off and eyes-off when it comes to the SABC. Perhaps it can be said of past committees, but it is because of Parliament that the SABC much safer place than it was 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm sorry that you have that impression, but it's correct. And I know I can speak on behalf of the rest of the community in saying that I'm very, very pleased with the problem that I'm facing. And I prefer that I look forward to further in-depth considering the proposal that I've ever made. I don't think it's possible in this format to go through every single proposal and, you know, discuss whether it's valid or not. We all need to sit down to consider each one and put together a paper of some legislation. We don't only have to rely on when it comes to legislation, we can make our own laws. We are the legislature. So if there are amendments that need to be made to the Broadcasting Act, for example, which is necessary, because while case law has defined the role of the minister, it needs to be codified in the Broadcasting Act to make it explicit that the final authority is the executive eyes of the board. So that is just one example. And it was part of the recommendation of the the parliamentary inquiry of the SAC, which said that we consider a new funding model, and that needs to be done yesterday. And I would request that that put front and center to our discussion going forward about the SAC. And it doesn't help to play part of there are very serious issues that are at play, and we need to come up with solutions and not just criticize the changes that take place. We need to say, if you do not retrench, this is what we're going to put in place. Or if you are retrenching, going forward to make sure that you are not in another place where you're having serious financial problems, this is how we propose that you funding model to be structured. Thanks, Chair, and thanks once again to the organization that have come and spoken to us today. I would like to say continue lobbying us, because what we need to do here is we are representatives of the people of South Africa, and we need to hear from you what needs to be done. So continue your hard work, contact us repeatedly. We must do that. We are not people sitting in an ivory tower. We are there. Continue with your hard work, and thank you very much for the work that you do in your respective organizations. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Honorable Van Dam, for that. I saw you putting your hand up, Honorable Mulala. Can we first take Honorable Member Mackenzie, please, and then we'll take your hand.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity to engage. Firstly, let me thank all the presenters for their input today. I found it very, very interesting, very informative, and you always come away from this with a slightly altered perspective, which I think is can only be a good thing when it comes to making decisions. If I can just address each entity as you spoke individually, just a couple of questions. Firstly, as an overall perception, I get the idea that we seem to very seized, or you seem to be very seized at the moment with the current operating model in terms of funding, in terms of audiences, in terms of content, but less focused on the future. And that seems to be missing from a lot of the content. So we're running around chasing our tails in a contemporary paradigm, but broadcasting is evolving, and the internet and similar technologies are evolving so fast that we might still find ourselves chasing our tails in a couple of years while everyone else has moved on ahead with new platforms and new technologies. Let me ask the MDDA, what I did while some of the presentations were going was I downloaded a couple of internet radio apps, and I just did some searches for radio stations, and I was pleased to find that the SABC Classic FM are there, I think 5FM are there, are picked up on these digital platforms. So you have a global audience via that
apply that into technology. But I found, I then got a list of NVDA stations that are locally funded, and I found none of them. Not one. Not even Bush Radio. I found none of them on these, even doing a search on these internet radio stations. So my question is this, what steps are being taken by the NVDA to promote digitization of those radio services? The SABC said they had an issue around meeting the obligation to broadcast in all their languages. And of course, community media fills a very important role when it comes to, especially the languages that are spoken by smaller sections of our community, like Afrikaans. And I think community media plays a very important role when it comes to meeting that need. Which kind of lifts that load off the SABC. I'd be interested to know if the SABC agreed with that statement. But what steps are being taken by the NVDA to provide training and enhance digitalization in the community radio space? And similarly for press publications, what steps are you taking to empower people who are running community media to be able to produce publications that can be accessed on a mobile device going forward? I think that just in terms of input costs, that would make those entities a lot more sustainable. Then you also, and I quote, there appeared to be a unregulated and poor coordination of government spending, the government advertising. What issue exactly are you highlighting when you say that? Unregulated and poor coordination of government advertising. And if you could just give me an idea of what you're highlighting, or the problem that you're highlighting. And then also they say, unless a problem has a solution, then it's not a problem, it's an issue or something else. So if you have a solution to that, I'd be very interested to hear what that is. And I was also very pleased to hear you single out multi-choice and refer to them so positively for inputs they're making in your particular sector, given that DSTV appears to be the devil of choice for many people who appear before the portfolio committee. I'm not quite sure why. I don't personally subscribe to DSTV, so I'm not sure why they're the enemy as much as they appear to be. Then, in terms of the SABC and all the engagements we've had during this parliamentary term, I've always had a difficulty getting a straight answer to this. I always understood, very similar to the post office monopoly on parcels below 1 kilogram and mail items below 1 kilogram, they have a postal monopoly, and the revenue from that postal monopoly is meant to subsidize the rollout of their services in deep rural and underserviced areas, in other words, in the more unprofitable areas. I was always under the impression that the public broadcasting mandate for the SABC is funded by license fees. That seems to be the idea that I have in my head. Is that still applicable? And how effective are we in enforcing and collecting license fees? And do you have a sort of number that says, well, only 50% of license fees are paid, but if 100% of fees were paid, then we would be able to meet our obligations. Do you have any kind of modelling that you've done that you can give me some clarity on that point? I would appreciate that. Then just a holistic comment. In terms of funding generally for the broadcasting sector from the public purse, and Namisa, what...
Thank you for that.
can we please have Honourable Member Mulala, and I'm going to be unhonourable and use the limited power that I have and request that you limit your questions to two questions so that we can finish because we've already gone over our time.
Okay, thanks. This is Abongi. And maybe let me first welcome the presentation and thanks to the presenters. I think the presentation was quite insightful. We have learned a lot from the presentation. My comment will be very short. Mine is not a question. It's a bonking. I think one of the messages I'm receiving, which I wanted just to clear, that we are quite supporting the broadcasting industry as a whole, as a committee. I think Honorable Van Damme has captured that quite well, that maybe we need to sit down as a committee, look at the entire presentation, and then do some reflections, and then, if possible, have another session where we can now fully engage. I don't think we will be able to engage today, Sarah. But I must also emphasize that all of us must agree that there are not easy solutions to all the challenges that we're facing. And unfortunately, I'm also on the load shedding, but I hope I'm still on the floor.
We can still see you in the dark.
Yeah, I'm also on load shedding. But I wanted us to, maybe next time when we engage, put all our presentation into a context of our mixed economy model, because we are dealing here with the larger part being commercialized, the larger part being the public interest mandate, and how do we deal with and in terms of legislation and policies, because the bulk of the presentation was around the funding model, the operating model, as Mackenzie has mentioned, and how that, that impact on both these two dimensions. The other area that was mentioned by one presenter, but the last end, was the how does the state SDP collaborate, the state of collaboration of the state entities also must find expression, because we can't just talk about the challenges and not look at how best we can help each other to mitigate those challenges. And maybe lastly, on my part, yes, I agree with a lot of presenters, but we are moving far more faster than the South African demographics, and maybe we also need to work on that and see. Technology is moving quite faster, but we're leaving our people far behind, and maybe that's one of the areas that we also need to look at. But from where I'm sitting, I think I want to support the Honourable Van Damme, that maybe we need to sit down, reflect, do a reflection, and then come back. And then definitely, I think we'll engage fully. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, sir. I'll hand over to the chair of the committee before I get the responses. And I'm hoping Member Mandate will be able to provide also insights and inputs on the way forward. Before we hand over, the pointed questions were only asked to the MDDA and the SAPC, so I'll give them an opportunity to respond briefly, but I'll hand over to you because hopefully you can also give us the direction and the way forward on how to interrogate some of these presentations moving forward.
Abongile?
Yes.
Hi, Chair. I'm just trying to check. Oh, Chairperson is still logged on, so it's all right. Probably connection problems, hence he's not...
Okay, can we hand over to MDCA to respond first, then he can speak last.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions. I will be sharing the questions with the answers with my colleagues, including the board that is in the house. The first question from Honourable Ngwenya was about the cost of the high cost of rentals. It is part of the challenges we identify, the high cost, the high part of the high cost of operations or operational costs. In terms of partnerships or agreements or lobbying the municipalities to house some of the stations is something that is in the pipeline. We are meant to be meeting with Falca, but it is a terrain we want to tread with very carefully, because remember that there should still be independence in terms of the broadcasters that would or would manage to find spaces or accommodation in this municipalities. As it is now, how we're dealing with the challenge is that as part of our operational cost of funding, we do pay for the rent. It's not something that we want to put in the longer term, but we will pay until there is another solution to the challenge of rent, because once they are unable the rent to pay the rent out, that's what we think, that they get kicked out. We would have invested in that station, and then the equipment that we bought, so expensive, gets confiscated, must go to court as the MDTA and fight for that equipment to get it back. So it becomes a little bit untidy if we don't support that area. So we support it. And then in terms of the appointment of the company secretary, yes, I'm happy to announce that Ms. Yolanda Dupree started working as a company secretary permanently from the 1st of August. And in terms of the risk specialist, that position is vacant. However, there was an agreement earlier this year, I think in February, March, with the audit and risk committee that function must be moved to finance, being handled by the finance manager. But what we've also done is we have procured a service provider to actually look after our whistleblowing mechanism. Okay, so that does not happen. So that's what we've done, and there is an opportune time to re-advertise the risk specialist will do so. The reason we have moved into finance is because we struggle to retain people in that position, and I think it's because of the level. So we're trying to sort out the junior level of the position that makes people not to stay. Do stations struggle to establish a legally constituted board? An area that we work with ICASA on, because that part is part of the compliance with the broadcast licenses. But when you come to our funding, also we insist on knowing whether your board was constituted legally through an AGM, which must sit on an annual basis, and that there was community and so forth. And when we fund you, therefore, we ask for compliance reports from the regulator in as far as that is concerned, because they monitor that. Honourable Van Dam, she was making comments and mostly on the SABC. Honourable Mackenzie has talked about the focus to the future, so I will have either the executive manager for coach just at the MDTA, because that's core business, dealing with the future, and especially us embracing the digital convergence. If she is not there, is also being kicked out because of load shedding, I'll have Ms. Martina De La Tonya answering that digital and the steps that we are taking and what we've done so far, including in the fact that the MDDA is working with FPV and other entities in digital literacy throughout the country. Then in terms of Honorable McKenzie also asked me a direct question about what I mean under my challenges when I talk about the poor coordination of government advertising or the lack of regulation. I'm specifically referring to the 30% set aside in that slide, and that part is actually meant to evoke an emotion from the government in particular, and our minister to actually make sure that UCIF because it's not empowered by legislation to ensure that all government departments and government entities and all the three spheres actually make use of the GCIS in media buying, particularly from community media. That's what we're talking about, that we need that working because it also forms part of the sustainability that we're talking about. That is the revenue generation then from that end that impacts the community media sustainability as it is now. I think it's completely uncoordinated. It's wait for Department of Health to be the one that comes and says, GCIS, can we for the campaign for GBC or this and that, can be advertised with you? I think there must be a proactive way. If there's no proactive way, I think we need some policy of some sort that will compel the government departments particularly to actually make sure that that 30% is applied as well. Yes, I think, Zo, are you back? Mr. Kashe is not back because of the load shedding. I'm going to ask Ms. Martina De La Tonya to deal with the area of the digital, because the area she's very passionate. She's a board member and very passionate about the digitalization of the sector and all the digital things that we're doing. Thank you very much. Ms. Martina?
Thank you, Zuki, and thank you once again to this joint committee that is meeting and has brought all of us as stakeholders together. Honourable Mackenzie, there are great plans afoot emerging from the recent research conference that was hosted by the FEDA, which did a two-day very extensive consultation and engagement with many organizations and community projects virtually. And the issues you're raising around finding community radio stations, finding publishing organizations in the online space is difficult because there's no kind of shared space. So one of the projects the MBDA is exploring is the development of an app, which the executive presented to us recently, and which is being considered by the board in the next board meeting. Definitely there are solutions available and we will be putting money into those kinds of solutions because there's a common interest. I'd also like to say generally that we're very happy that we're going to be joined. On our website, and I'm very happy personally and the rest of the board very happy to have these four new board members joining at a very critical time of growth and development in the sector. So thank you to the committee, and I think we'll be reporting on Friday to you about more of the details around the community media sector in the COVID space. But just to also say that it's been very useful to hear from the National Association of Broadcasters, from the SABC, what the common challenges are, and that we need to really apply more systems thinking in the way we work. And if Parliament plays a role in bringing us together because we have a framework, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Can we please have the SFC respond to the questions that were asked? Go ahead. Thank you, Chair. I'll respond to the question regarding whether we have engaged with the department, the DCDT, on the current issues that are raised regarding policies and regulations. Yes, Chair, we have for the years, not only once. There have been processes that were set by the department from the DOC and the DCDT that actually have to do with the old visual policy, submissions you made, and engagement with the industry have had. And also, broadcasting policy. In the past, we continue to engage on those kind of issues. The attitude has been positive that there should be a review of this legislation and the policy so that
you know, an enabling environment is created. So in short, yes, we have engaged, and our issues are documented and are on record. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Maneli, Member Maneli, can you please ask your question? I'm hoping you're actually not going to be asking your question, but you'll be wrapping up and providing guidance, because from the input that I've been received from other members, it would seem that this should not be the end of the conversation, but it should continue so that there can be direction provided moving forward based on all the insightful presentations that we received today. Mr. Maneli, over to you.
Thank you to thanks for helping us through with all the 19 cases that we did have been achieved. But I think, as you said, I needed not to ask the question that I wanted to ask earlier. But more to say that I think going forward, what is important is what has been raised, I think, by Honorable Fandara, Honorable Mola, that we can't have the time to engage. We may need to look at what are state that have been since isolate so that we can engage further on how we can that happen. But I think also what comes out then clear is that there will be a need for collaboration across the sector to be able to deal with the current challenges. But I think what is also more important, which is wanted to raise would be on whether they are also considering, I think that's the matter they need to look at going forward. For example, they mentioned the channel on education. I know there's also a NEL sport channel, as well as also the parliament's channel that most South Africans are unable to access given the platform that is in. On whether they are considering those in a way that the department's consent would be able to come on board in terms of funding such a mandate, just to take lessons from what would have happened during COVID, that their own programs needed to be shifted to allow such like the health department communicating to South Africans and in times that are not cleared by the broadcaster. So I'm just saying these are things we think we should engage. And maybe the last 2 points to bring forward, which will be really emphasized, is that from the presentations which we welcome, I think we shouldn't leave with an impression that indeed the committee is hands off or probably may not be supporting even turnaround strategies. It may be important to put that on record, that the committee sees to the turnaround strategy, including the discussions that are unfolding now, are in the main about pillars that are in the turnaround strategy. And I think the real struggle is how best that is implemented, more than making it not to happen, because we would want to really reposition the SABC in that regard. And the committee will still have an opportunity to discuss specific matters with the broadcaster and all other relevant stakeholders in a way that find solutions. And amongst those stakeholders is really the role of the department that presides over the entities that are also contributing in the inability of the SABC to fulfill its mandate as per their presentation. So the committee is seized with with all those. And it is in our interest to have an ethics that that works. And of course, as I said, from a regulatory point, would really be looking forward to engaging in a way that understands, like Honorable Mlanga said, that unfortunately technology is not moving at the pace that regulation and policy moves, and therefore type of policies and regulations do we need that preempt or at least project the future, so that when there are developments in the sector, it's not about regulation all the time, but regulation itself would have created an enabling environment for such developments to happen. So I think that would really be my close point, that it's not the end of the engagement. We'll continue to engage, including where needed, bilaterals with some of those who have presented, just to get deeper in terms of understanding where they come from and for them to understand where the committee comes from. I can guarantee on behalf of the committee that the approach of the committee thus far, since we started the city parliament, is really to minimize party political agenda, looking at ourselves as having sent by the same parties as public representatives that represent the interests of South Africans first before the parties that we represent. That I can assure you that that's the approach of the committee. And this is the approach we are taking in repositioning the SAPC. Once again, thanks by our facilitator. I know, Wongile, that was a very short notice for you, but you've done very well to get us going. We really appreciate, as well as the presenters. Thank you once again. Formally would now adjourn until we can meet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There was a request from the SAPC, but I think with the direction that you've provided, it's clear that there will be more opportunity for English for sincere apologies on action, and I think it's just mine to thank everyone for participating. It was indeed an insightful session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, colleagues. That was great. Thanks very much. See you in the house. Bye, Honourable Gwenya. It was nice to see you. Nice to sit with you on the team.
Mr. Mackenzie, goodbye. Unfortunately, some of us will not be seeing you in the house. We'll see you on Friday.
Same request. I'll always see you in the house in my head. Thank you, my brother. I like that.
Thank you, Mr. Mackenzie.
Thank you.
Thank you.